This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Welcome to the third hour of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I want to read some of these text messages at 833-212-1017. 833-212-1017. The caller says, actual masculinity is being protective of others and what's right. I can go for most of that. Some people, though, you can't protect everybody. And if someone doesn't need protection and provision because they want to protect and provide for themselves to exercise their independence, let them. Caller also says, awesome take about how the orange dude's wife is never seen being affectionate to him. Hope you repeat that next week when you're on air with your coworkers who support the orange one. Yeah, we're doing our like a politics show. Oh, why'd I sign up for that? It's me, Dr. Ken, Tori, Bailey, and Telly. And it's 2 hours. That's too many personalities to have in one room, too. That's the other thing about it. And we all have, we have different political views, but they kind of run the continuum. I stand on what I say because, I mean, I say what I say every day publicly and on the record, and it lives on the damn internet forever. So if I said something 6 months ago, it's still there. So obviously I got to stand on it. Now, there's some things where I've gotten new information, I've changed my position, but at the time I say something, that is what my truth is, and that is what I believe. So the thing about, and I don't know Donald Trump and Melania's relationship, and maybe it was like an arranged marriage, like, hey, Trump needs to be married to a woman. He wants a woman that's beautiful. He wants a woman that's not American, because American women very well may hate him. And so maybe it was an agreement. She wants to live a great lifestyle. He probably thought that she was attractive. And he was like, hey, I'll pay you and I'll give you a lifestyle. And okay. But a woman that loves her husband, kisses and holds her husband's hand and hugs her husband and congratulates him and is proud of him, just like a man who loves his wife does all of those things in public. You don't hide. If a woman loves her husband, she wants the world to know. She don't want to have nothing to do with Trump. And maybe Trump doesn't want to have anything to do with her. But just contrast that. Right. When Trump gives a speech, and he gave one, when he gave his speech at the RNC, his wife wasn't there greeting him, hugging him. Honey, you did a nice speech. But when Michelle Obama gave her speech, here come Baraka. He came. He ran. And he said, I read his lips. I read his lips. He said, now they know. And she gave a way better speech than him. Way better. She should have went last. Michelle Obama is going to go down as one of the best convention speeches in history because it was common sense. It was factual. It was nonpartisan. It was just, she fired on all cylinders, and Barack was average. And plus, we've heard Barack speak so many times. He didn't really knock nobody's socks off. It was good to hear from him. But what was more important is seeing that genuine love and affection that they have for one another, even though she did say she didn't like him for about 10 years. But that's the other thing. You cannot like your spouse and still love them. You cannot like your spouse and not ever want to leave them. You cannot like your spouse and then also not want anyone else to have the spouse that you don't like. Let's talk about this with Al. Hi, Al. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing good. First thing I want to say is, you know, some husbands are worrisome. But for some women, it's just a beneficial arrangement. So as long as she's getting her needs met, she don't care what he do. As long as she don't have to be in the limelight. Also, I wanted to tell you, a lot of men are very masculine, but some of them are very fragile and very sensitive. Prime example, a man will find out a woman don't want him, and he'll jump in his car with 50 cents in the gas tank to go try to find her, because somebody is younger and longer is beating it out. And unfortunately, it's not him. They just got to learn how to take rejection. Also, I don't see nothing wrong with a man paying for cat, especially if you're stepping out on your wife, because the lady you are going to, it has to be a beneficial arrangement. So you should be paying her, because if she comes out against you, it's probably because you was not up front and you was not standing on business from the beginning, and you tried to get cutthroat with your personality, and you tried to step out by lowering the money. So then she puts you on blast. So if you are going to step out on your wife, you should be paying her for that cat, just like they did in the First Testament of the Bible when they had multiple wives. Everybody got to be taken care of because she's taking time out her day to mess with you. And also, you got to understand, sometimes when they step out on a wife, it's because they don't want to be at home, because the side piece is the one who actually make them feel better. You know, so I just wanted to share that information. And one thing I want to put this out here to you pimps, I don't appreciate your nickel horse coming up to me in a parking lot asking me for a dollar.
The pimps are not listening to my show. You can't give a public service announcement to pimps on my show.
Well, I'm pretty sure a word of a feather flock together, but some of them are listening. I don't appreciate nobody coming to me on Capitol talking about, can I get a dollar? Okay? If you have a pimp or whatever, a sponsor or something, if you are walking around here with a dollar, maybe that's not the occupation for him or her, all right? And should no woman be broke, as that old wife saying, grandma used to always tell the girls, if you have breasts, a mouth, and a cat, there's no reason you don't have $1,000 in your dresser. But I just wanted to share that information. There's nothing wrong with men stepping out on their wives and paying for cat. But if you are going to mess with a woman outside your marriage, it has to be a beneficial arrangement for all parties, because you cannot come to her household sitting on her sheets, taking time from her when you got somebody at home. So it has to be a beneficial arrangement. And if you don't want it to be a beneficial arrangement, stay at home with your wife. That's where Donald Trump messed up at. He didn't stand on business. He wanted to get cutthroat with the money. And then he wanted to get shiesty. Then the other woman said, okay, then, well, I'm going to mess up your home. But his wife, Donald Trump's wife, she's not touching him anyway. It's a beneficial marriage. So she don't care what he do with, like, some of these marriages. He gets up in the morning, put on his dress clothes, jump in that Cadillac with the service soon light on and cologne, stay going all day pissing on people, then want to come back home and talk about he's Christian and he got old school fashion morals. Just make sure you take care of all parties and everybody will be happy. But if you get cutthroat, then that's on you and you take a loss. But I wanted to share that information with you, and I hope all y'all have a good day. And make sure you treat that woman on the side just as good as you treat that wife, because she has bills to pay too. And it pays the cost to be the boss. And if you don't got no money and you ain't paying, don't be trying to play. Have a good one.
I really don't want to respond to that. I don't want to, because first of all, there's some legitimacy and there will be disagreement. And the disagreement a lot of times is going to come from women. Sex work needs to be respected and legitimized, because when it is not, women get harmed. But sex work is exotic dancing. It's not just prostitution. It's a whole lot of stuff. You know, it could be even phone sex. You call a 900 number and the lady, who does not look like she sounds, is very nice to that man, right? And he pays $3.99 a minute or whatever it costs. Like, it needs to be legitimate. It shouldn't be seen as shameful. And I don't know what to say. I'm not going to say anything to him because I'm not in that situation. A man who is in an affectionless marriage, or a woman that is in an affectionless marriage. And I've had plenty of friends that have been married and divorced, rinse and repeat, married and divorced. And they have suffered through marriages where there's just no physical intimacy. Like, human beings need physical intimacy. We absolutely need it. Because if you don't get it, it changes you as a person. You become very cold. You become despondent. You become distant. You become very negative. You become very pessimistic. When people are loved and have affection and people kiss them and hug them, like, it's very important for all human beings. And if you are committed to somebody for the rest of your life and then that is gone, that's got to be really, really hard. That's difficult. And I'm not encouraging anyone to step out on their spouse. Whether I encourage it or not, people are still going to do it. But there's reasons why. Like, some people are literally dying inside because they're not getting any affection from the person that they are supposed to be getting the affection from. And it's unfortunate. And people do, you know, they go find it elsewhere. So there's that. He is right, though. It isn't very masculine for when a man is not wanted by a woman. You got to almost consider that a blessing. Because if she is clear enough with you and if she's like, hey, and there's a bunch of different ways, and I'm sure women will like give you signs, and we don't oftentimes read the writing on the wall. But if a woman just isn't into you anymore, take the loss, fellas, have the funeral, mourn the loss of the relationship. There's probably nothing you can do to get her back. You can't keep trying, because if she is over you, she's going to go and live her life, and you're not going to like the life that she's going to live. You have to go and live yours. But consider it a blessing. If a woman's like, hey, it's not working out no more, you may ask why. You might want to know what you did so you don't repeat the same mistake. Sometimes people just aren't for people, you know? No, you can't go try to show up at her house and knock on her door. Yeah, don't do all that stuff. It's not very masculine either. All right, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back, and I still got to finish this conversation on how men exhibit their fears of women. Somebody had said in the text message chat, and I used to have this philosophy too, that, oh no, white people don't think about us. They don't care about us. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. They're always picking with us. They're always challenging our votes. Wait till you see what happens in November. There's going to be a number of people from surrounding areas that are going to come to the city of Milwaukee. They're going to challenge ballots. They're going to challenge someone's legitimacy of voting. If they didn't think about us, they would give us more access to the ballot box. They wouldn't outlaw drop boxes. They would have more polling locations. Republicans would allocate more money so we have fully funded polling locations, and it would be easier for us to vote. They're afraid that if we get political power, we will use it like a weapon, like they use political power against us. Remember, the whole Jim Crow era was solidified in policy. It was illegal. That means they passed an ordinance. They passed a law where you couldn't sit where you wanted to on the bus. It was illegal for you to use a certain bathroom if you were black in Itala County, Mississippi. It was illegal for you to drink water at this fountain. So they don't want us to have political power because they are afraid of what we may do if we get it. And all we even want to do when we get political power is just like give people health care and lower the cost of insulin. That's about the worst that I think black people want to do when they get real power. We don't want to start wars. We might want some reparations. We might want a little money. But other than that, we don't want to do nothing evil and sinister with our power. So yes, that is a way in which they think about us all the time, and they're fearful of us. The reason why that so many Republicans, even to this day, are against the Affordable Care Act, even though their voters and their constituents, their friends, their Republican family members benefit from the Affordable Health Care Act, healthcare.gov, and a sign up is coming up soon. I hate finding out people ain't got health insurance. Go to healthcare.gov and get you some of that $5 health insurance. Now, tired of this. Because they don't want black people to get it, because they know how sick we are. They know that we're dying. They know that our life expectancy is shorter because they cut funding for healthcare centers in our neighborhood. Meaning, they know that white folks are going to die too, but all they got to do is just prevent abortion, and white folks will continue to maintain their population numbers. But if you don't make healthcare affordable, more black people will die. That's why there's a donut hole in Medicare. You got to pay 20% out of your pocket for your additional healthcare costs, even though you are retired and you paid into that system for decades and decades, because they know that black people, even in retirement, have less money. They're going to make you come out of your pocket, out of your savings, 20% to cover the cost of your healthcare, even when all your healthcare costs should be free, because they know that's going to harm us, because they're afraid of what we may do if we live a long time. We may organize. We may restructure politics. We may do to them what they did to us. Yes, they think about us. Yes, they're afraid of us. There's a whole political party that is set up designed to hurt and harm us and stifle our progress. So the majority of black folks, even in this city, barely rise above middle management. They're afraid of what we may do if we run the company, if we're the CEO. They think we may fire all the white people and hire a bunch of black people. And a lot of us probably would. No offense. White people can go find jobs in all sorts of other places and spaces and different fields and different vocations. And a lot of times, the white folks don't even have to have a clean background. They ain't even got to have a college degree. We got to be felon free, misdemeanor free, a degree in this, a master's in that, a certificate in this. You got to know how to type. You got to know how to use Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel. You got to know how to put together a PowerPoint. I know how to put together a PowerPoint. I don't like to put together PowerPoints, but I do. You got to have slides. I sometimes put animations in my PowerPoints to make them jazzy. But no, we're not going to They're always trying to harm us because they're afraid of us, afraid of what we may do with power. And men are afraid of women, too. We're afraid that she may leave and take the kids. She may leave and make us have to pay the alimony, child support. That's a triple whammy. Take the kids. Now you got to pay alimony and child support. And then she might get the house. She might get the car. Men are afraid of that. If I was married and got divorced, and let's say I had, this is just as much of a fantasy, me ever getting married. Let's say I had a Ferrari, a very nice Ferrari. It was red. It was shiny. It was fast. And I got divorced. Oh, no. She took the house. She got the kids. And she took my Ferrari. And then I see her some months after the divorce. And it's some 25-year-old muscle-bound punk driving my Ferrari, my wife in a passenger seat wearing a sundress. Woo! I'd be afraid of that. Oh, man, not my Ferrari. And I'm over here driving a Chevy Volt because my wife got the Ferrari. I'd be afraid of that. I'm take a break, come back. Oh, look, the caller's on the line. We should be afraid of him, what he's going to say. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
So I'm scrolling up in the YouTube chat. Y'all going to have to forgive me because I can't keep track of all the different chats and the text messages, whatever. But y'all talking about Eric Hovde. So I didn't know he was on Tory's show yesterday. Somebody sent me a screenshot. And Lovey in the YouTube chat says Eric Hovde is a stick and he wants us to be too. All that mess he was talking on Tory's show yesterday. Liz and Tory was hyping that man up. Curly Q. Yeah, so... Carrie, it was that Juneteenth day, I think. There was a screenshot. Oh, somebody sent it to me. It might have been a whole segment on the show with John Oliver last week tonight where they show Carrie's face like rolling her eyes because Eric Hovde joined them at Juneteenth day and that made John Oliver's show on HBO. And then there's this article here. Senate hopeful Eric Hovde has run a gaffe-prone campaign in Wisconsin, to put it mildly. Republicans are counting on him to defeat Tammy Baldwin as they try to win back the Senate, but Hovde certainly hasn't made that mission easy. His false claims about being a self-made businessman, the viral clip of him flubbing the Pledge of Allegiance, and his cruel comments about older voters have put Hovde's awkwardness and ill ability to connect with voters in the spotlight. And the clip making the rounds on social media adds more fuel to the fire. The video recorded at a Juneteenth event in Milwaukee shows Hovde trying to loosen up a bit during an interview with Tory Lowe. And here's how they describe Tory Lowe in this NBC article. They call Tory Lowe a Trump-aligned activist who is black. And so Tory wouldn't deny that. So I'm not saying anything negative about Tory. I'm not saying anything about Tory. Tory wouldn't say about him. So. When one of Lowe's co-hosts asked what knowledge about black culture Hovde planned to take away from Juneteenth Day that he hadn't already known, and Benjamin asked him that question. I was already gone, but I saw a clip of it later, but I'd already left Juneteenth Day. Hovde responded by listing his purported bona fides. Hovde says, look, I've spent a lot of time in black culture, and as Tory knows, I've spent a lot of time in places like Africa, because I have homeless shelters for abandoned kids and rescuing kids out of the streets. And I've been involved in schooling, charter schools, and things of that nature. That was a tortured introduction to Hovde's real answer to the question, which was that he apparently learned that slavery occurred in Wisconsin during the 19th century. These remarks were reductive and ignorant of the array of black experiences. Visiting places like Africa doesn't necessarily make one familiar with black American culture, which is what is being celebrated at the Juneteenth Day event Hovde attended. and the implication that one understands black culture by virtue of their work with homeless shelters, abandoned kids, or charter schools reeks of stereotypes and white paternalism. Let's talk to the caller. You're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and I'm glad you pointed that out, because unfortunately some of the shows that are on 101.7 The Truth reek of stereotypes that you and I and Tony Smith and many of the people who grew up in Milwaukee in the 80s and 90s, it just does not fit us, because we had hardworking parents who were middle class and successful. There are some who want to believe that most of the funds that are allocated for entitlements go to single black mothers, and a lot of that goes to farm subsidies. That, you know, has nothing to do with the orange man, which is what I really want to talk about, that she had a great take on. And I noticed that when Michelle Obama was standing there, she said what she said for 20 years since we've seen this couple come onto the scene, is that this man, Barack Obama, our former president, is the love of her life. And that speaks to your point about being wanted or not wanted, and why those things are. Barack Obama seems like he had two grandparents and a mother who nurtured and loved him, as well as mentors like you and I had, which takes me to Mr. Beckham, whose 95th celebration you wanted to know about. It will be held in November. I'll get the exact date. And the great James Gordon, my mother's second husband, who was a Vietnam vet. My father, who was a hardworking man, who when he got off went and was cool, and still to this day at 79 last week, DJed his own birthday party. The variety of people like your Uncle Max shape young people, boys and girls, so that we are not afraid of each other. And that is what is lacking in people like Trump and his vice presidential choice and Hovde at Gates. And when you look at the other side, where you have Jasmine Crockett and Raphael Warnock, those are the people you're talking about. They're cool, and I think they all get laid without paying people. And the other side goes and spends money on prostitutes and say that they're the party of the family. And for black men who follow them, they are probably those guys who you're talking about, who are sexless, who choose to follow this secessionist philosophy. Because I saw Confederate flags and hangman's nooses, which was the reason 500,000 poor white people died trying to maintain slavery in the 1860s, when our ancestors were in the Delta of Mississippi, Professor Hughes, and probably during the time when my ancestor and your ancestor were probably on the same slave ship.
Very profound, the caller.
Thank you. God bless.
For your call. Appreciate your call a lot. It started with the institution of slavery. I've discussed it in the past. It's always worth bringing up because there's some people that are kind of confused about it, about the institution of slavery itself. So if you think about the institution of slavery and all that it encompasses, and so when we think about it, we tend to look at the abject cruelty and the brutality of it, which is very much a part of the institution, make no mistake. In fact, you cannot have chattel, colonial, North American slavery without the brutality. But if you look at it economically, American slavery was in the worst economic interests of white people. And whites in the North knew that, and that is why it never really existed in mass in the North. There was a period of time where it was just, yeah, you can buy a person is property. Now we have maids. We just don't beat them. I mean, people have sex with their maids, but it's probably consensual, right? So we've always purchased people for domestic labor and to help people, or we hire people to pick our crops if you got a farm. Farmers aren't always out there picking their own corn, right? So that's just a part of it. Now we purchase people's labor. But slavery as an institution always worked against the economic interests of white people. But if you could convince them that slavery somehow benefited poor, penniless, landless white people and get them to fight your civil war on behalf of the plantation owners, on behalf of the slave owners, then you would have a cohort of white racists in your pocket forever. Think about this. Let's say a large plantation had 500 slaves on it, which is not unheard of for a really, really large plantation, 500 slaves. How many white people do you think that they actually hired and paid a wage when you have 500 human beings that the slave master owns? He owns them. They do all the labor. Why would the slave master, think about this practically and economically, why would the slave master pay a white person 30 gold shillings an hour when you can have the slave you own perform all of the labor? If there was slavery, white people weren't working. And most of them, because they weren't working, didn't have enough money to buy land, to have a farm, to have a plantation, and to buy slaves. They kept poor white people poor on purpose. And what they would do is every now and again, they would throw them a bone by saying, well, at least you're not these people. How about this? We'll pay you to be an overseer. One overseer for every 50 or 60 slaves. But the slaves had the jobs. White people weren't getting paid. Now, there were industries that were making money off of slavery. We're talking about poor white peasants in the South that didn't own the local newspaper where they would make money off of advertising slave auctions. They didn't own the insurance company because slave ships and their cargo were actually insured. I'm talking about poor, landless, penniless, illiterate, didn't go to school, white people in the South in the 1700s and the 1800s. But then they were convinced, oh, no, we have to maintain our institution of slavery or something bad is going to happen to you poor white people. The poor white people should have been against slavery, too, because if you have an institution of slavery, white people are not making wages because the slaves have all the jobs. And we weren't just picking cotton. You know that we were like designing roads and building houses and building barns and putting shoes on horses. And we were blacksmiths. We were skilled labor because when slavery ended, black men that were blacksmiths and road builders, they built houses. They did all of the labor that was necessary to maintain basically a small city ecosystem that is a fully functioning plantation. So then what do we do? First thing we did when we were released from bondage, somewhat released, is we wanted to find our family members, right? Because we got separated from family. So we wanted to find our family. There was no Google back then. We couldn't find them on Facebook. It was very hard to find your family. So that was the first thing we wanted to do. Next thing we wanted to do is we wanted to go up north and work in industries and get jobs that actually paid wages. Because as slaves, we got no wages. And we were skilled labor. Remember, a slave boy at the age of 12 probably learned how to put a shoe on a horse. He probably started learning how to lay the foundation to build a house. As a child, he learned this. So by the time he's 25 or 30 years old, he is skilled labor. So then we had those skills that we learned in slavery. And this is what people that explain slavery get wrong. They say, oh, well, black men learned a bunch of skills. Yeah, there was a lot of brutality, too, though. But when we came north and tried to get factory jobs, jobs that could employ us and pay us a good wage because we were literally skilled labor because we had to be. Then they invented closed shop unions because they were afraid that black men who had trade skills would come up north and fill all of those jobs that require someone to know the trade. See, that's their fear of us. So they closed these industries. Oh, you have to be a member of the union to work here. And then the freed black man be like, oh, OK, well, how do I join the union? Ah, you can't because you're black. So wait a minute, you mean to work in this entire industry, I have to be a member of the union? That's right. But I can't join the union because the union doesn't allow black people. That's also correct. Another mistake that they made. What happens when unions allow people to join? If you want to work in that industry, you want to work in that factory, you have that skill, what happens when they allow people to join? Your union grows. You get more union dues and you have more political power for your union. So white folks were shooting themselves in the foot with that too. By not letting us join the union, they weaken themselves politically. If there's 5,000 white men in this particular union, this industry, maybe it's the Carpenters Union in 1867. But there's 10,000 black men that know carpentry because they had to, because that was one of their jobs when they were slaves on the plantation. You now have 15,000 people in your union where you only had 5,000 before, but they were content with the 5,000. So the institution of slavery itself always undermined white economic progress. That's why you still have so much damn poverty in the South now, because there was no industry that came to rescue white men. They were landless and penniless. All right, take a break. Come back. Talk to Northwest Side Tony, apparently. The Truth for Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Hey, everybody. The next Beyond the Mic Happy Hour Mixer Series is going to be Friday, August 30th from 5 until 7 p.m. in Mr. B's Lounge, located at 8617 West Brown Deer Road. You know the drill. Delicious cocktails, wonderful food that they have at Mr. B's. We're also going to give away some Chula Vista Resort stays. So I do this. You get a raffle ticket when you come in, and then I got to yell out the raffle numbers. So when I tell you I'm yelling out the raffle numbers, please listen for the raffle numbers, because I don't have my man Keon to yell out the raffle numbers when my voice ain't loud enough. We can't wait to see you on Friday, August 30th from 5 until 7 p.m. at Mr. B's for maybe our last one of the year. Maybe. Maybe I can talk the station into doing a September one. Either way, I'm going to do a debate watch party. I think the debate is September 10th. So stay tuned for that. That's not going to be anything I'm going to do through 1017 The Truth. That's going to be done through Sherwin The Truth. Truth Nation, election season is in full swing, and we need to have an insightful discussion on the political issues that matter to our community. This is why we will be debuting The Truth on Politics on Tuesday, August 27th from 6 until 8 p.m. on The Truth. This monthly show will be a roundtable discussion, which will engage in a thoughtful debate on local elections, policies, and impacts you all, which impacts you, and break down everything you need to know about the upcoming election. I hope, no, it's not going to be a debate. I'm not debating them people. I ain't debating Dr. Cannatore. That's going to be a mess. We're going to talk about stuff. No, I ain't debating. So they shouldn't have put this word in here. Do not miss out on the debut of The Truth on Politics, Tuesday, August 27th from 6 until 8 p.m. with Dr. Ken, me, Telly, Tori, and Bailey on the award-winning 1017 The Truth. I'm not debating them people. So somebody commented on the amount of times that Eric Hovde is on Tori's show, and they said, oh, Sherwin, you should have Tammy on your show. I've had Tammy on my show. If I can't have Tammy on my show as much as Eric Hovde is on Tory show, and no shade to Tory, but Tammy is running a full 72 county campaign. I wouldn't want her to be here this much. Eric Hovde is trying to suppress the vote in Milwaukee. That's why I think he's here a lot. That's a part of his strategy. Tammy is actually out talking to people. So not only is Tammy going to beat the brakes off of Eric Hovde, Tammy is going to get a higher share of votes than Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Mark that down. Write it down. Take a picture. Put an asterisk next to what I'm saying, that, and I'm standing on that, because that's going to be the absolute truth. She is going to win by a larger margin, Tammy Baldwin is, when she beats Eric Hovde, than Tim Walz and Kamala Harris will have against Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. In fact, Tammy Baldwin voters are likely going to carry Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in Wisconsin. They're going to win by, this is my prediction, write this one down too. Trump, Biden won by 20,000 votes, right? 20,781, something like that. Tim Walz and Kamala Harris are going to win by more than 50,000 votes, maybe like 75,000. So it's going to be a way bigger margin, way bigger. So write all that down. But no, Tammy was here. I interviewed her. July. I think I interviewed her in July. Yeah, she was here. Maybe June. But I'm not having her on this show every week. I'd get sick of her. I don't like interviewing the same person a whole, especially if they're doing the same thing. So when I interviewed Kamala the first two times, she was stumping for Mandela. And then the next two times I interviewed her, it was like Biden policy stuff because she wasn't the nominee yet. So I interviewed, when I talked to Kamala four times, I don't know how many times Tory has talked to Eric Hovde, a lot. They just talk about the same thing because he's running for Senate. If I had Tammy Baldwin on here four or five times, I would have exhausted my questions. I would just sit here and look at her because I wouldn't have nothing to ask her no more. All right, let's talk to Tony from the Northwest side, not to be confused with Tony from the Southeast side. Hello, Tony.
How you doing, brother? How you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Well, look, I don't want to disparage anybody. I just want to go over a couple of things real quick. I remember listening to your show a couple of months ago, maybe it was even last year or before the referendums, when you said that Joe Biden sent the state of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, money to deal with the lead pipe issue in Milwaukee. Is that correct?
Yeah, through the infrastructure bill, yes.
Yes, to help fix lead pipes. Now, Brother Tory Lowe, I'm not trying to shade, but Brother Tory Lowe years ago was ranting against the dangers of lead pipes and what it's done to our community with kids, violent acts, lack of education, mental development, to all be tied to lead pipes. Yet the same brother, and I'm not going to say his partner, were always going around about how Democrats don't do nothing for black people, they do nothing for black people. That was a small sample of what he did, to deal with the lead pipe issues. I'm not going to talk about health care, how unemployment amongst our people under Biden was lower, how health care, how people brush health care aside before Obamacare. Now, plenty of people in our community at least the health care together because of what they've done. I'm not saying I'm a Democrat. I'm an independent. Anybody knows me who knows I am, although this time I'm not voting nowhere near red. I used to have more respect for Republicans when Reagan was there. Now they're just off the rails. They let this vile demon poison their party. For people like that to say Democrats will do nothing for black people, it irritates me, Sherwin. Yes, they do. They may not do as much as you hope they do, but they do far more. As you say yourself, Republicans do not pass policy to benefit us. It's stupid for them to do that. They came to Milwaukee with their RNC and gave us almost no money. Why would they want to help a liberal city? That's all I really have to say.
Okay, Tony. All right. I appreciate your call. Sound a little frustrated. Tony was mad. Hey, everybody. Listen, I've known Tory a long time. I think Tory is a gem of a human being. I just don't agree with his politics. But y'all call me and complain about him. And I get it. He doesn't read the chat. And I don't know if he takes calls. He used to have this thing. I filled in for Tory exactly one time. And it was even before we moved over here to the Third Street Market Hall. We were still over at Radio City. So it was 2022 or before. Only one time. So he used to have, God, we're spending a lot of time talking about Tory today. I'm not throwing shade on Tory. I think Tory is great. Tory does stuff that I can't do. Like, he's a great guy. I like Tory. I like him as a human being. He's a sweetheart. He's a great guy. Very nice. He had a philosophy, like the first hour of his show, he didn't take any calls. Which I get, because you want to lay the foundation for your show and you may have a topic that you want to get out and you don't want it to be interrupted, because calls sometimes can take us in a totally different direction, as you clearly see with my show, because ain't no telling who might call me. And so when I filled in for him, and that was back when Tory's show and my show ran back to back. So Tory was busy. I think he was in Madison doing stuff. And my show went from 10 to 1, and then Tory's show was 1 to 4, but they changed, my time changed. And like, hey, Sherwin, can you fill in for Tory? He'll be here at, I don't know, 2:30 or something. And Benjamin was Tory's producer at the time, and there were people that were calling, because I basically did as best I could, a continuation of my show. And so people that couldn't get in during my 3 hours wanted to call during my first hour of filling in for Tory. And Benjamin wouldn't answer the phone because it was Tory's policy on Tory's show that you don't take phone calls for the first hour. I don't know if Tory still does that. But if he doesn't take some of you guys' phone calls, especially during the first hour, that may be why. I also know that it would be a waste of time for any of you to try to change Tory's mind. I think his mind is pretty well made up on where his politics are. And I say that because there is not a Trump supporter that could call my show and change my mind. They just can't. You can't do it. Well, Sherwin, what about? No, that doesn't work. Oh, Sherwin, what, Donald Trump did this? No. Donald Trump is one of those men who's got to pretend to be big, strong, and bold and masculine because he is deeply insecure and he has always been chasing his father's love. That every member of his family says that he's always wanted his father's approval. Even when Fred Trump died, Donald Trump was like, I still have got to make my father, probably, and his father like neglected him and he wasn't very nice to him. If you know like Donald Trump's like the psychology that created him, you'd actually feel very sorry for him. But he shouldn't be president. He shouldn't be president. He should like do something else. He should sell used cars at big bills. All right, I'm gonna take a break, come back. We're gonna talk to Curran on the other side. The truth was sure when he was a be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Be sure to tune in to Jammin' with Juice today, I guess, as they will be broadcasting live from the brand new Midtown Tsunami Express Car Wash located on Fond du Lac and Capitol. Also, to celebrate their grand opening, Tsunami Car Wash is giving away free car washes. Yeah, you heard me right. That's one free car wash at Tsunami Express between Wednesday, August 21st and Sunday, September 1st. So be sure to join Jammin' with Juice today from noon until 1 as they broadcast live from the Tsunami Express Car Wash. And August is Black Business Month, and the award-winning 1017 The Truth is teaming up with Associated Bank to celebrate the excellence of Black-owned businesses. Carrie will be hosting a Black Business Spotlight show on Monday, August 26th from 6 until 7, and she will spotlight three locally owned Black businesses to tell the stories of their success. Whatever your financial needs are, Associated Bank can help. Member FDIC. Let's talk to Curran. Am I saying it right? Curran. Hi, Curran. Are you there, Curran? I hear you. I'm about to say something embarrassing. It's your phone.
Curran.
Hello, Curran.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, oh, I can hear. Yeah, I can hear you guys. Hey, I love you guys, man. Tory, I love Tory. All you guys is bigger than the atom itself. And you guys got the masses behind you.
Thank you. Next time when you call, you got to turn your radio off, though. Got to turn it off.
Oh, I got to turn my radio off?
Yeah, because okay, we hear the echo in the background.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I could hear you the whole time, but I also heard the echo of the radio show in the background. So when you call, you got to turn your radio down. Turn it off.
Okay. Can I turn it up so I can hear it?
No. Either you talk.
Okay.
Or you listen.
Okay, yes, I can talk. Okay, I'm listening. I hear you now. Hey, I love Tory. I love you guys. I love all the guys on 106.5. All you guys is the bomb.
What the hell is one?
And
oh,
I knew.
NOV, all right. That's fine. Huh? You said another radio station. That's fine. Well, I'm glad you love everybody. Thank you, Curran. We love you, too.
I'm not done.
Oh.
All I'm saying is, you guys, I knew as soon as you guys got a platform, all this business. I'm going to tell you the real story.
Oh,
good. Only way we're going to be ourselves if the America do us like they did Israel. Set us in another country and give us our own. Long as we got here in America, we can always have this. Agree. To disagree.
All right, so we need our own.
That's all.
All right, Curran. Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, and he hung up. All right, then. Brandon Williford said the next Beyond the Mic is going to be by his house. Come on and join us, Brandon. Jamel says, I'm going to try and make the next Beyond the Mic. I've been apprehensive because certain politicians that like to show up and smile in people's faces. So they only came to the first one. I don't know if it was, and they're nice people, and Jamel, I know that you have, you know, your position on respectability politics, because you're right, being nice, you think it doesn't work. I see politics a little bit differently. If I can see countries that are literally at war with one another, like their people are on the battlefield at that moment in time, murdering and killing each other, and the two leaders of those countries that come together to talk about peace or a ceasefire, whatever, those two leaders fundamentally hate each other because they are losing friends and losing family members on the battlefield. but they sit down, they shake hands, and they try to work something out. Politics is a very, very sophisticated game of chess, but it uses human capital, so the stakes are very, very high. And if I'm sitting down with a chess master, I'm not going to be cussing at him and yelling at him and screaming at him and berating him. I'm going to beat him. I'm going to be nice to him. I'm going to be cordial to him. I'm going to be very respectable to him, but I'm going to beat him into the game. If I sit down with a chess master and I talk about how stupid he is and he's a terrible chess player, and then he kicks my tail in, then I wish I wouldn't have said all of those things. As angry and as emotional as we get about politics, because we know what's at stake for our community, we also know what we're fighting against. I think it's, and this doesn't work for some people, this is just my philosophy on it. Respect goes a long way, because they know that you hate them when you sit down with them. Like, that's understood. If you know that I'm on a different side than you politically, I don't need to talk about how mad I am at your political stances. I'm just going to try and beat you. And then I get the glory. You know what I mean? So we look forward to seeing you, Jamil. And Jamil, you got a future in radio. You do. You're the next coming. All right. Gigi says, I'm going to have to watch the playback, but reading the chat, I know I missed something. You always miss something on this show. Bab says, it's true. Who's a vile demon? Somebody's a vile demon, in quotes. Not really a city girl says, Tory is great. We don't have to agree on politics, but he fights for the people.
You can't really do both. If you fight for the people, but then let me take Tory out of it. We were talking about Tory a lot. I hope Tory ain't mad at me.
It's not my fault. Tory wasn't a topic of mine. It was a topic of yours today.
If there is a political party that wants to invest in the people, but you support a political party that doesn't, then are you really fighting for the people? You know what I mean? Like, that's the hard part. But, you know, whatever. Everybody has their own viewpoints and their stances. All right. I think that's about it. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you listening. Have a great day. Hug somebody. I'll see you next time.